Good afternoon, and welcome to Spokane Public Radio's Northwest Arts Review, a half hour exploring the people, places, and events forming the rich arts tapestry we enjoy here in the Inland Northwest and our wider Intermountain Northwest region. I'm Jim Tevenin, pleased to be your guide on this journey. Our focus today is music and art in the Lake City, Coeur d'Alene. We'll visit with Blair Williams, owner of the Art Spirit Gallery, and Julene Dance, executive director of the Music Conservatory of Coeur d'Alene. Dan Webster offers some cinema wisdom, and our Mozart is from the String Orchestra of the Rockies. This is Northwest Arts Review. It's my great pleasure to again speak with Blair Williams, the owner of the Art Spirit Gallery in Coeur d'Alene, one of the artistic mainstays of the Inland Northwest. So good to talk with you again, Blair.
Good to talk with you as well. Thank you.
So you have a new show open. You have probably a new regime as far as dealing with the COVID situation. So let's start with the good news first. You've just opened, as a matter of fact, the 24th Annual Small Arts Invitational. Tell us a little bit about that tradition first.
Absolutely. Thank you. We have been fortunate enough to, for 24 years now, open our doors to offer small works by many of our artists throughout the region, some of which are part of our normal stable of artists. Others are artists that we've been wanting to bring in and give a try to their work and really felt that this gift-giving time period was a great opportunity to try them out with our audience. So this is our 24th annual Small Works Invitational. This is also our third year that we have now moved our Small Works Invitational into both November and December. So the show opened this last Friday, November 13th. And it will come down on December 23rd.
All right. And for those who have not experienced it before, what's your working definition of small works?
Well, as in years past, you'll find a superabundance of affordable and unique fine art paintings, ceramics, sculpture, and multimedia works. When we say small, we don't necessarily always stick to a small size, if you will. But we try to keep things in a price form or price range, rather, that folks can find it affordable for gift giving. So generally speaking, it's $900 and below. We've got items that are coming in at $30. We've got items at $50, $100, and so on.
Mm-hmm. And in addition to some of the more familiar names who are on the roster for this time around, are there any artists that you'd like to single out for honorable mention for being especially interesting new arrivals on the Coeur d'Alene scene?
Oh, well, that's an interesting question. Yes, thank you. We've got two beautiful pieces by young designer Alyssa Bonn, and they are of Scotchman's Peak, sort of a map-like format, if you will. Amanda Bielby out of Missoula, Montana, she finds most of her work, or most of her materials, rather, from building sites. She works in the building industry, and then she recycles remaining items and materials that are left over into these beautiful landscapes and such. So that's one of my favorites. We also have a new artist that we've recently brought into the gallery, Sandy Bransford, who just does the most ethereal and mythical sculptures, and we're proud to have her back joining us again.
That's great. And, of course, I did mention that there are many familiar names here, among them Victoria Brace and certainly Harold Belays, whose work keeps kind of circulating through the community. That is kind of a marvel.
It is. It is. And you know, we are honored to be able to continue to represent his work. In fact, we will be bringing in four brand new, never been seen before stencils of his that his widow has asked us to come in and represent. So those will be in the show starting next week. We have an enamel that has just come to us from the secondary market. Those are very rare. We don't see those too often.
Are there a couple of pieces that to you are ones that are must-see items, or they will just kind of catch, if you go to the gallery, they will just sort of catch your eye and pull you into them?
Absolutely. You know, some of my favorites from this show are, again, a new artist that we've recently brought in, Doug Flukinger. While his work is graphite, it will immediately grab you as a photograph. You'll think that you're looking at a black and white photograph, only to step in closer and realize that the entire image is created by graphite. So some beautiful imagery of our region. Of course, also Kathy Gale. Kathy Gale, her oil work has just exploded with color and vibrancy this season, and we're excited to have that as well. And a final piece that I would mention, boy, I am just enamored by Sheila Evans' move into the world of enamel. And it relates as well to Harold Belays. Harold was the one that had recommended that she look at dabbling in enamel, and she just took off. She has a piece in this show that is a wind chime. So it is an enamel wind chime featuring birds, and the tone of the wind chime is just fabulous.
Well, that's all the good news as far as the wonderful art that will be viewable for a while, the Art Spirit Gallery. Now, what are the strictures that you're currently operating under, and have they changed recently?
You know, they have and they haven't. Our gallery made the decision, the conscious decision, back in May when we reopened to mandate masks in our gallery at all times. And we have seen maybe 3% of our visitors choose not to adhere to that, and they, of course, are not able to then continue into the gallery. So we have not seen a change in that. Although our governor has now moved us back to stage 3, limiting us to just 10 people in the gallery at any given time, we find that we never generally have more than 15 people in the gallery at any time. So while we haven't yet had to limit anyone, we don't foresee that that's going to be a large problem for us.
Yeah, probably, especially given the time of year and the fact that the summer crowds, such as they may have been this summer, certainly are not there.
Exactly, exactly. But, you know, at the same time, we've done our best to try and move as much of our work online as possible. So whether it be offering the comfort of shopping at home, or being able to partake in a 3D tour of our shows. We're doing all of these pieces and bits, if you will, to make sure that we can still allow people the opportunity to experience our shows and the beautiful work without having to leave their home.
All right. Well, there you have it. And all this is available online at theartspiritgallery.com. And, of course, in person, if you're willing to mask up, on Sherman Avenue in Coeur d'Alene. Blair Williams, we wish you all the best and a terrific Thanksgiving, and the best to all who are there in your shop for a happy season and also a safe one, and just some great art to look at.
Thank you. Thank you very much, and thank you for all that you do to help make our holidays so happy.
The 24th Annual Art Spirit Gallery Small Works Invitational is viewable in person and online through December 23rd. And now, a brief music interlude from a recent String Orchestra of the Rockies concert. It's part of the serenade best known as Eine kleine Nachtmusik by Wolfgang Mozart. On next Monday's Music That Matters program, our guest is the orchestra's artistic director, Maria Larionov, sharing her musical story. We'll also hear the complete Mozart Serenade and Felix Mendelssohn's String Octet. Music That Matters, Monday at 7 Pacific on KPBX and online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Dan Webster is with us today with a review of Sofia Coppola's film exploring father-daughter relationships, On the Rocks.
New York-based writer Laura has a problem. Okay, it's kind of a privileged problem. I mean, she does live in a spacious Manhattan apartment. She's married to a hardworking, successful guy who is a good father to their two exceedingly cute daughters. She's a published author. And as imagined by writer-director Sofia Coppola in her feature film On the Rocks, the world in which Laura and her family live isn't threatened by anything as forbidding as a worldwide pandemic. So considering everything, maybe Laura's situation doesn't seem all that serious, but then personal troubles tend to be relative, right? And anyway, as Coppola portrays it, Laura, played by Rashida Jones, is experiencing more than merely the kind of midlife malaise that tends to hit all of us in one way or another. While her husband Dean, played by Marlon Wayans, is busy trying to expand his business, her days are fairly routine, fixing breakfast, getting her girls off to school, and listening to a friend drone on about her love life. And that's the good news. But then sitting in front of a computer screen, Laura finds herself unable to summon up not just the right words, but any words at all. And even if that doesn't sound all that bad, Laura has been growing increasingly concerned that the romantic spark seems to have faded in her marriage. Oh, Dean is affectionate, but it's in a brotherly peck on the cheek kind of way. He's always going away with his strikingly attractive personal assistant. Laura found a bag of her toiletries, of all things, in his luggage. And there was that moment one night in bed when, half asleep, he reached for her, but pulled away upon recognizing her voice. Who does that? Well, according to Laura's dad, Felix, a guy who's cheating on his wife does that. And of course, he himself would know, seeing as many years before he cheated on Laura's mother. and has, since then, led an auspiciously sybaritic lifestyle. Whether he is right, though, becomes the basis for what Koppel has concocted as a plot for On the Rocks, because Felix, played by none other than Bill Murray, then enlists Laura on a mission to see if his theory is correct, a mission that, geographically, takes the two not just around New York, but eventually to Mexico, that comically involves more than a bit of farcical skullduggery, and yet emotionally causes Laura to question whether the father she loves, and who clearly loves her, ultimately has her best interests at heart. Father-daughter issues would seem to be a natural topic for Coppola, daughter of the great filmmaker Francis Ford Coppola of The Godfather fame. It wouldn't be too easy for anyone to emerge from the shadow of such a famous parent, but the younger Coppola has spent the last two decades doing just that. Beginning in 1999 with The Virgin Suicides, and continuing with such feature films as Lost in Translation, also starring Murray, Marie Antoinette, The Bling Ring, Somewhere, and her 2017 remake of The Beguiled, Coppola has amassed a resume of films that center largely on stories involving women. Whether we're watching a character played by Scarlett Johansson trying to find her life's purpose, Kirsten Dunst as the French queen losing her head, or Emma Watson playing a young thief talking about karma, Coppola's main interest is in who her characters are and what causes them to do what they do, which is why our sympathy should, naturally enough, be with Laura, as mine were, even when Murray, as he usually does, overwhelms everything with his inherent sense of charm. Everyone he meets, from doorman to the police officer whom he sweet-talks out of giving him a ticket, loves Murray's Felix. Coppola even gives Murray a scene where he croons a song, as he did on Saturday Night Live. Despite all this, Jones, the daughter of another storied father, the composer and record producer Quincy Jones, manages to hold her own. But no matter what her intent was, Coppola can't avoid Murray's innate comic sensibilities from taking over. As for his Felix, well, he's a bit too old to change, and his need for his daughter's love and attention are just too great. At the beginning of On the Rocks, he says to a young Laura in voiceover, "And remember, don't give your heart to any boys. You're mine until you get married. Then you're still mine." While that line doesn't come across as creepy as it may sound, Felix's emotional needs do weigh on his daughter, and it is up to her to realize this en route to becoming her own independent woman, just as, we are free to imagine, Coppola herself had to do. For Spokane Public Radio, I'm Dan Webster.
Movies 101 host Dan Webster writes about movies and more for Spokane7.com. Movies 101 is heard Friday evenings at 6:30 here on KPBX and at 1 Saturday afternoons on KSFC. We've been following the gestation progress of the Music Conservatory of Coeur d'Alene, growth that has been frustrated in ways small and large, but now seems to be on a steady upward path. I talked with Executive Director Julien Dance at the end of October as some major developments had occurred.
We met one morning for a business meeting with the commissioners and were mandated that we just needed to buy the building. Uh-huh. And it was, okay, we were planning on a lease and mostly putting our efforts into renovation, which was around $100,000. And then the opportunity to buy it was great, but not really in our plan. Although those people who wanted to save the building felt like this is our only option. We just have to go forward. And we did it within hours, coming up with an agreement to buy the building for $500,000, finding an investor, and then going ahead with documents to lease from that investor. And that's all been since October 8th.
And it might be good to fill those in who are maybe late coming to the game here, because this is a historic structure in downtown Coeur d'Alene that was set to become a parking lot, if my memory serves me correctly.
Yes, you're right. The county had bought the property because they wanted to expand their, quote, campus. At first, they thought we'll tear it down and build another courthouse. I don't know how those thought processes have changed, but I know they're building another building on their existing campus. Then they decided they would make a parking lot out of it, and the neighborhood just went into an uproar they didn't want another parking lot. They didn't want another high-storied building, and they went to work to save it. But there needed to be a purpose to save the building.
Mm-hmm.
And all sorts of ideas came up with historical emphasis, like we could have people tour the building, we could try and make it into another museum.
Let me interject here, because, again, to set the stage properly for those who have not been close to the story, have not been able to follow it, that this is a historic residence called the Hamilton House that has been there for about how long?
Since 1908, I think it's George Keith was the architect, and he did quite a few buildings in Spokane, but this is the only building that he did in the Coeur d'Alene area.
Hmm.
So, and he was had a little bit renowned for his works. It had an aura of being something really special.
Mm-hmm.
And then there were mayors. There's a couple of mayors that had lived in the house. We've had other musicians.
Let's cast our eyes toward the future. So the building has been rescued from the jaws of what one might call quote-unquote progress.
Oh, and it was amazing. Mm-hmm. Yes, it was an amazing 3 days. So meeting the county's criteria. And anyway,
well,
some things fell through. And then some things came forward. So.
All right. Well, that's wonderful, because now you are poised to actually begin the very hard work of making this dream of the conservatory in Coeur d'Alene become a reality with actual students, performances, and what have you. Now that the rescue is complete, tell us about your next steps in this process.
Yes, we're right in the middle of the, like you said, the very hard work. And we got the keys, actually, to this house on Tuesday morning. So, and that very moment that we got the keys, we had an architect come through, and we already have a project plan with the city, but now we have to go through to actually use architectural drawings. We're not changing any walls. The inside of the house is glorious and wonderful. It needs to be cleaned. There's a few code-related items. We need to make sure the electrical is okay. So we have a plan. And the second week in November to do a renovation party. We have a lot of volunteers that are going to come in and help us clean the house. We want to buff up the floors. Of course, it's too late in the season now to paint the exterior, but there is a lot of exterior work that we'll proceed to do in the springtime. And that, of course, takes money. And so we're in the midst of fundraising and putting together our sponsorship packages. You know, it was like, could we have done all of this before we got the house? But then, like I said, it wasn't until actually the last 24 hours that we actually secured the house before the county deadline. And how much money do you put into, you know, all kinds of things before you actually have the house? That's where we are. We're working with contractors, electricians. We have a website that we've developed, and now we're starting to populate that website even more. We have a donate on the website. And marvelous things have happened, like I said before, the nth hour, but also people have donated pianos, and I've got some in storage. I'm working out with piano movers to try and, you know, get the house ready and then get all those pianos moved in at one time. We have faculty. We have marvelous people that have come forward. Some people are coming from different parts of the country that want to teach at the house. And then we have schedules. Anyway, I could go on and on.
No, it sounds as though, what was just the cloud of a dream has really begun to take some physical shape and direction, because if you do have interest from faculty people, then that's one of the real keys to getting this entire project underway. We're entering a couple of things. One, the onset of winter, and then also the insecurity of gatherings in the face of the resurgence of the COVID virus. So do you have any ideas at this point as far as other actual outreach events that you might be able to hold in the near future?
This renovation party will totally be distanced, you know, the workers. So we're not worried about that. A lot of raking outside and cleaning up the grounds, removal of some old landscaping, and then, of course, washing down walls and things. As we move into the teaching, and I have to go back to December, we're excited about the holidays, being able to decorate at the house and, you know, do some open houses. And we want to have a Christmas gift party so people can come and donate to some things that they would, you know, really make a difference at the house. We have put together fundraising letters and items that are going to be very important to get us going. So that's in the schedule. The COVID thing is really difficult, mostly because it's hard to let go of funds right now. It's hard to think being up about the future. But everyone has told me that this is exactly what everyone needs. It's the music. It's looking forward to something very wholesome and happy and growing. A music school is different than just going to your piano teacher. So we're thinking that we're really developing something that I hope will lead to an arts and culture center in the city of Coeur d'Alene and be a pinpoint for that triangle of Sandpoint and Spokane and Coeur d'Alene of music and arts. We're going to be a very solid alliance with Sandpoint. Mm-hmm. They have their conservatory. It serves 400 to 500 students currently. Some of people that are moving into Coeur d'Alene, and as you know, there's huge growth, are going up there for lessons and to be involved in a conservatory. So we know that we have a need for the school, and it will start with the little babies just starting to walk and up to age 4, and the music program will develop as they get interested in instruments and private lessons and more ensemble work, and then go into orchestral and working with each other and collaborating with other, you know, the college and other things. So it has purpose. It's a bright feeling.
Right. And it is a journey. And you have taken many steps on the journey already. There are many, many, many more steps left to go. But at least you've got a direction and there is hope. Julian Dance, thank you so much for your time today, your enthusiasm, and for your work. And remind everybody again about how they can access information on the Coeur d'Alene Conservatory of Music.
Yes. They can go to www.cdaconservatory.org, and there is a place to donate on that website. You know, at this point, we need everything from like chairs and floor rugs to money just to get our studio helper, computer programs going, and to take care of the concrete, paint the exterior, you know, all of the things that you can actually imagine, mm-hmm. contractors, electrical help. So everything helps, and people are really being generous, and we would love to show the house to anybody or talk to anybody.
We'll continue to follow the conservatory's progress and look forward to the time when music from students and faculty can be part of our programming here on KPBX. Thanks for listening to Northwest Arts Review. I'm Jim Tevenin. We're grateful for the assistance of Blair Williams, Julian Dance, and Dan Webster. Just a bit more Mozart from the String Orchestra of the Rockies takes us out. We're going to take the Thanksgiving week off, so join us again in 2 weeks for another Northwest Arts Review. Thank you.